What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Down to the Wire. I got my boy Mason here. Mason, how you doing, man?
Look, Cam, it's the off season. It's okay to be a little rocky right now, but we'll be full gear ready to roll when football season rolls around.
Yeah, man, we'll get our previews going, I'm sure, sometime in the summer. I know, like, spring practice is going on right now, and like, this is like a complete opposite of what I was doing last year this time. Like, I was literally looking for any and all information of what's coming out in spring with the new coaching staff. And this year, I've maybe looked at maybe one article, maybe one like practice video. It's just like, oh, you know what, Brian Kelly, he's got it. We're fine. I don't need to worry about it. I'm good. Like,
you're getting too comfortable. You can't be comfortable.
Listen, it is what it is. So I'm kind of chilling, coasting to the summertime. You know, we had the big tournament just happen. You know, we're just cruising along with all the crazy crap that's going on in the world. So you know, that's just how it is this year, I guess. We'll see how it goes.
Okay, so, look. So this is my whole argument for why you don't watch XFL football, because now you're comfortable. You're not ready for football right now because you just turn around and watch XFL on Saturdays. So you don't get. So look, that's my whole argument. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. So we just had the big NCAA tournament championship game. It was actually last night. We'll give you kind of our thoughts and reactions to the whole March Madness, which again is just such a magical time of year. And this year it was definitely mad. Tons of crazy crap happened this year. We'll get into NBA playoffs starting up a week from today, or a week of recording this, on the 11th of April. Play-in games start. So Mason's favorite sport. Rounding out here to the end,
yeah,
of the most fun time of year for them, playoffs. Somehow the Celtics scored a bajillion points on the Bucks. I'm sure we'll talk about that here soon. So we'll talk that. Probably maybe talk a little bit of NFL draft that's coming up at the end of April. Talk about maybe some players that you're thinking about fantasy. Mason and I are part of a fantasy dynasty league, and you know, are we going to hash some things out for a trade, Mason, on the podcast? Probably not. But you know, we'll maybe talk about some rookies that might be coming up, or just kind of generally talk draft. I don't know. We'll see how it goes here. Mason and I are usually kind of butting heads anytime it comes to trading, because we're doing the exact same thing here. So it doesn't really work out too well for either one of us. So we'll do that. And then Mason, you know, what is it that you want to do at the end here?
All right. So, because of March Madness, I won't give away one of my top picks, but I feel like we should either rank or do a top five most disappointing moments for us as fans, either of our teams or whatever we want to do. But I definitely have at least a list, small list for myself.
So you just kind of like sprung that on me. So like, I might have like one or two by the time we get this, but for our next podcast, I'll for sure have a list, and maybe we'll go home. We'll kind of get our thoughts together after maybe putting out some feelers tonight, and then come back and have a full list on the next one. But you know what? That would be a great topic to hear from our fans too, to see, hey, what are some of your top five biggest disappointments as fans? I think it'll probably be a fun time to laugh at each other and to see the tears rolling down faces here. So we'll go ahead and get into it, Mason. I know you definitely want to talk college baseball, so I know we're going to do a full deep dive in that just for you. I'll let you kind of lead off. Go ahead. What do you think?
Pitch clock, I don't know where this came from. Seems pretty cool. Speeding up the game just a little bit. I don't know much about it. I just think it's cool. Shohei Ohtani apparently runs the world now. He's the only name I ever hear because he's just awesome, I guess.
Yeah, he's great at college baseball, Mason.
Oh, we're talking college? Okay, look. I just gave you probably my only like two things that I know about baseball in general, and none of it involves college baseball at all. So.
It's okay, Mason. Maybe one day you'll see the light. we'll just move on. I'm sure nobody cares about college baseball or listens to college baseball besides me. So we'll just move on. I will say they've had a pitch clock in college for a while, but they added like a little timer for like the hitters to be ready. So like the hitter has 10 seconds after a pitch to be ready to hit. And if he's not ready, then it gets a strike called on him.
Nice.
Like, that's crazy to me.
Yeah, that works.
What? Like,
that
what? Cool. So, I mean, it has really helped with the speed of the game. So now instead of 4 to 5 hour games, these games are happening 3.5 hours. It's wow.
Good.
I actually have the rest of my afternoon.
Let's drop it down to 2.5 and you'll have my
That's too short, yeah, Mason. You gotta have at least a little bit of length in baseball, man. You gotta have a little bit. It's gotta be an afternoon thing. It's like golf. You guys, it's gotta take care of half of your afternoon, half of your day, okay?
Yeah.
You can respect that working at a golf course, right?
No, not really.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and get into March Madness, man. What were your general thoughts on the tournament this year?
So going into the tournament, for some reason, I felt like there wasn't going to be a ton of upsets. And then, of course, ding dong, it happens every year. So this was honestly, I don't want to say one of the craziest tournaments that I've seen in a while. But when you get a 9 seed going to the Final Four, and it's really not that outlandish because they're playing against a 4 seed and a 5 seed. And I don't even remember what the other seed was at this point. But it had to be, to me, a little too many upsets, honestly, if we're being honest. But I don't know. How did you feel about that?
I thought it was amazing. Okay, so I think, if we're talking tournament in general as a whole, I thought it was an amazing tournament with tons of, exciting moments and upset. Obviously, the upsets were all over the place, and it was fully madness, and everybody's brackets were basically destroyed in about 5 hours, basically. I thought that was great. I'm kind of with you. This is kind of the sentiment that I think half of the college basketball fan base has of, man, you just didn't really have any big teams in the Final Four, and it was just kind of underwhelming. And, I kind of get that in a sense, but at the same time, aren't we all rooting against the best teams in the tournament? Isn't that what we all love? Whenever we're seeing all these upsets, 16 seeds upsetting and seeing Kansas lose and Duke lose, Duke obviously wasn't what they have been, but that's what everybody kind of roots for. So this is the perfect tournament for that. And then you kind of complain at the end. It's like, oh, well, you know, it's just a 5 and a 9 and 2 4s in the Final Four. It's that's what everybody roots for. What are you complaining about? You want this to happen, but then you don't like the end result of this is what happens, you know? So I will say this. I'm not a big, I consider UConn a blue blood. You might not. We were kind of talking about this before we started recording, but they have the tied for 4th most championships in the country, and they got all of them since 1999. So if any kind of newer program or newer to the scene of kind of prominence program can be considered a blue blood, they're the definition of that. That they fit. So I'm always going to root against them. And it was really kind of to me, it was disappointing. One, it's impressive, but two, it's just oh, this sucks that they're beating every single team they play in the tournament by 15. And part of that is because of the upsets. Part of that is because, all the better teams that they probably would have played got destroyed. Arkansas beating Kansas. Kansas might have put up a better fight. They played Gonzaga. Gonzaga wasn't great this year. They beat UCLA, but UConn had the easiest path to the tournament because you had a Kansas that might have not have had Bill Self. You had Gonzaga, which wasn't great. You had UCLA, which was limping into the tournament based on injuries. They ran out of gas. So, they had it made. And then you played Miami, which, they're a good team, but, they're not great.
Let's break this down.
Yeah.
Because in the Final Four, you have 2 5 seeds, which was Miami and San Diego State. You have a 9 seed, which is Florida Atlantic. And then you have UConn, who was your champion, as a 4 seed. Which, if you look at it from a different perspective, Purdue was your 1 seed. You have Purdue, who got knocked out in the first round. Then you have Kansas, who got knocked out in the second round. And then you have Bama and Houston, who both got knocked out in the Sweet 16. I mean, those are your 4 1 seeds, and not a single one of them made it to the Elite 8. To me, that's not what a successful tournament is going to look like for the NCAA. So I don't know if it was just a seeding problem, because that's kind of how I felt most of the tournament, that especially UConn. UConn was not a four seed, but somehow they slipped to four. Purdue was never a one seed. They just had a good record during the regular season, and then they won the Big Ten, which for some reason vaulted them to a one seed, and it almost felt like the committee wasn't even watching Purdue play at all the entire year. So, like, I don't know if it was a committee problem just having trouble ranking these teams this year, but it just nothing felt right about this tournament. And if you compare it to last year's tournament, you look at the Final Four last year, it's all blue bloods. Like what you're talking about with UConn, it's North Carolina, Duke, Kansas, Villanova. Villanova's not a blue blood, but still, it's a big program right now. That's a night and day difference to what last year was to this year. So I don't know. Like, I know you're Mr. Upset. You like your Cinderella stories. But to me, like, the meat and potatoes of the tournament is when the bigger and the best teams are making it towards the end. UConn was one of those teams. They made it to the end. I don't want to hear Florida Atlantic or San Diego State. And I don't want to hear that at all about them being two of the best four teams in the nation. I just, like, I can't get on board with that. But, I mean, that's why you have the tournament. So, I don't know.
I mean, I definitely think that there definitely was an issue when it comes to seeding, which is why you probably saw some of the upsets or some of the games that you saw. I mean, let's start with some of the four seeds. I mean, you think Virginia was a four seed? No. I don't. They got beat by Furman first round.
Yeah.
That killed a lot of people's brackets. Another four seed, Tennessee, a four seed?
No,
I don't think so. They are too high. I mean, they finished fifth in the SEC. Texas A&M was runners up in both the conference tournament and in the regular season. They're a freaking seven.
Yeah,
like, I mean, that's pretty crappy. Kentucky being a six, ridiculous in that same bracket. And then you got another four in Indiana.
Yeah, no. Gosh. That's three, four seeds.
The other four was UConn. I mean, UConn, you look at the record, they lost some in the Big East, but they beat every single non-conference opponent by double digits, I believe. Like every single one. Like not even close. You think they should be a four seed? I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't.
They had Baylor. Baylor was a three seed. Baylor should not have been a three seed. I could see them as a 4-5, but as a three seed, absolutely not. I mean,
as it's three seeds, like, you got Baylor, you got Gonzaga, you got Xavier, and you had Kansas State.
I feel like they got two of those right with Gonzaga and Kansas State. The other two, I don't know. Those don't feel especially watching them in the tournament, they did not feel like three seeds.
Yeah, I mean, you just constantly kind of had that kind of issue where you had people overseeded, and then you had teams like underseeded. I mean, FAU, really good basketball team, a nine seed.
Yeah,
let's give them more respect than that. They only lost three games all year heading into the tournament. Like, I get their Conference USA, but I mean, a nine seed, you're matching them up with Memphis. I mean, the argument would be, okay, well, they're a nine seed. They'd have to face the number one. Well, the number one in their bracket was Purdue and lost to FDU. Like, it was one of those tournaments. So, I mean, you would expect, like, FAU probably to normally lose in the second round, but still, I mean, you got to give them a little bit more respect to that. Maybe get them, like, a seven at least, you know?
And I will say this. I feel like part of it is we always come back to this for some reason, but transfer portal and NIL, especially transfer portal, because you can have guys just kind of pop in and pop out wherever they want to be at this point. And so, like, you're going to have somebody who probably played at like an Arkansas or something like that, go to like a semi-smaller school and have a lot of success and be able to push their teams further in the tournaments. Like, that's just going to happen. That's kind of the world that we're living in now, that we have to give more respects to the FAU and stuff like that. Cause like you said, losing three games, that's not a joke in the regular season. So like they should have probably been like maybe a seven seed or something like that. But
well, I mean, it also kind of goes on to the conversation of being an overseed with Purdue. Like, you think Purdue should be a one seed or Texas?
Texas. I was screaming my head off.
If Texas is playing FDU, I don't think they lose. And then they would have a match up with FAU.
Exactly.
I mean, and then you kind of kill your Cinderella story probably right there, because Texas is a legitimate team.
Yeah.
You know? So you see kind of all sorts of that. I mean, the one team that I think surprised everybody that I think was probably properly seeded was San Diego State, because they didn't have the easy run like an FAU did, or like a U. I mean, I don't want to say UConn had an easy they had an easier way than probably some of the other teams because of who they ended up playing. They're by far the better team in the whole tournament. So don't hear that. But I mean, San Diego State being a five seed, probably pretty fair, right? And then here's who they had to face. They had to face Charleston, which was a really good team, really good shooting team. That was one of a lot of America's favorites upsets was Charleston, right? They then play Furman, who just upset Virginia. And then they had to beat Alabama, which was the number one seed in the whole tournament. So if any of these other, like these lower seeded teams that really kind of earned their way would have been San Diego State. I mean, the bottom of the bracket, though, in that region really kind of hurt you, though, because, I mean, you had Princeton coming through. And then you had, I thought that Creighton would go through the tournament there. I kind of predicted them to get to the point where they did. I thought they'd beat Baylor. But, I mean.
Well, that's another one. That's another team that was super Baylor underrated. Yeah. Like, with Creighton, I feel like they should have been ranked a lot higher or seeded a lot higher in the tournament than the sixth seed. And so like when you line up the seeds and it's San Diego State as a five seed versus Creighton as a six seed, I don't feel like that's how it should have been. Like I genuinely feel like Creighton probably should have been like a four seed just because they've been top 10 in both offense and defense in the KenPom the entire season. And so like, I just, for some reason they were underrated. So like when I look at that, I see you have a great win against Alabama and then you have a really good win against Creighton, which neither one of those were hard or easy teams to beat. And then, so like San Diego State definitely deserved what they got.
Yeah. So, I mean, and then we can just go to UConn. I mean, UConn obviously won by double digits in every single game that they played in the tournament this year. I mean, they even did that in the out of conference, but here's their path. Okay. They played Iona first, which was one of the upsets that I picked, unfortunately. Poor Patino got drilled. But then after that, you know, they play St. Mary's. I mean, everybody, St. Mary's is a five. Are we serious right now? Okay. So they beat St. Mary's. And then because Arkansas beats Kansas, who didn't have Bill Self, they played Arkansas. I mean, Arkansas is a good team, but like, they're not world beaters. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, come on.
they're super up and down. And after that, they play Gonzaga. I mean, everybody has their own opinion about Gonzaga. It's kind of the same opinion that people have of Gonzaga as people have the opinion of Notre Dame football. Very similar. So I'm not going to get into that. We'll probably get into that kind of conversation when we get closer to football season, when we have our tag team hate on Notre Dame. But I mean, they play Gonzaga and destroy it. Like I think they beat Gonzaga worse than they beat any other team in the tournament.
Yeah.
And then after that, they played Miami. So, I mean, if we're choosing the two teams that made it to the championship who had a harder road, I think we're all going San Diego State. And the game was, you didn't get to watch and probably didn't even want to watch the game, the championship game, but it was a lot closer than the score was at the end. It's just San Diego State is a defensive team that goes on spurts where they just can't score. And that was just kind of the issue. They didn't have an answer for Sonogo. And then at the end, after they brought it within five, they just missed a couple shots and the refereeing, in the game, I thought was atrocious as well. UConn was in the double bonus with like 10 to 8 minutes left in the game.
Oh gosh, dude!
The double bonus. So like, it was a honestly, it was a miracle that San Diego State brought it within five, within like two minutes left. And then because they missed a shot and then had a weird call and other, like, it, to me, it was just like, okay, we're calling ticky-tack stuff on one side and then we're letting them play on the other side. And it's just, it was a little infuriating. But, I mean, hats off to UConn for winning it all. But, you know, it was definitely, I think, to me, like, it's impressive that you beat your team, like, every team you play by 15. But at the same time, to me, that also points to, okay, you didn't play great competition in all the games you played. So is it that impressive? Is it more impressive than San Diego State being the number one overall seed in the tournament, being a really good underrated Creighton team and getting to the championship? I think it's a little bit more impressive for San Diego State personally because of who they had to beat. They just unfortunately came up a game short. So,
okay, I want to circle back around to this blue blood conversation real quick. Okay, I feel like we need to lock in who the actual blue bloods are before we move on from this. Because to me, I feel like there's really only four, and it's North Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, and UCLA. Like, I don't feel like there's any more blue bloods after that. Like, I get what you're saying with UConn, that they're fringe blue blood, but I feel like it's really just those four.
Indiana.
I don't put Indiana in that, no. I mean, like, Indiana's an awesome program. No.
Kansas, I think no? It's
okay, you can talk me into Kansas, but like
Kansas in that. Okay, that's, I mean, that's what's my first.
Okay, look this up. What has Kansas had success-wise before Bill Self? Because
they had a lot of success before Bill Self.
Are we sure? Because I, for some reason, I'm feeling like there wasn't much.
All right, let me look this up for you. Let me look it up.
Kansas feels like one of those teams that just kind of gets placed into as a blue blood. And I could be eating my words right now, like completely. It could be thrown back in my face. But it just feels like people look at them and say, okay, you've won a couple national championships and you have blue on your jerseys. So you're obviously a blue blood. But I don't know. I don't feel like they are.
They have 16 Final Fours.
Okay, how many championships? That's the important one.
Four championships. One in 52, one in 88, one in 08, and one in 22.
Okay, so maybe. They're French.
I mean, they had James Naismith as their coach. Or played for him. So he played there. Larry Brown, Roy Williams coached there. Then Bill Self coached there. Like, what are you talking about? They're not a blue blood.
Okay. All right, I'll eat it.
They're first in all-time wins. Third in winning percentage.
All right.
They have the most consecutive regular season conference championships. They have the most regular season conference championships out of anybody. Like, what are we talking about here, Mason?
All right. They're a blue blood. Okay. I concede. All right. They are top five blue blood. Other than that, no. No more.
No more. We're not going to add UConn into that with the five natties since 99. We're not going to add Indiana to that, also having five natties.
Nope.
Come on, dog. Come on.
It's only five. Okay, if we're saying blue bloods, we just got to start adding teams to it. Like, at this point, we'd have to have like a set number of blue bloods. And then, hey, if UConn wins another championship, they can kick out Kentucky, or they can kick, not Kentucky, they can kick out Kansas, whoever. Do pick a team.
You can't just kick people out of the blue blood status.
Sure you can.
So
at this point,
no.
Okay,
no.
Look, blue blood is starting to turn into what the NBA Hall of Fame is. The NBA Hall of Fame right now is just a participation trophy. Are you a big name? Oh, here, we'll induct you into the Hall of Fame. That's what we're doing right now with the blue bloods. You can't do that.
Listen, I'm not saying to add Villanova or, you know, Kansas State,
okay, but we're getting
or
there.
Baylor to
That's
blue
the point.
Bloods.
We're getting
All
there.
I'm saying is if we're going to include any new programs in the blue blood status, it has to be UConn because of the recent success. That's it.
Okay, but
that's it.
If they win another one, they can kick out Duke.
Duke you can can't be kick on the out bench. Duke. They
you
have
can kick out Duke
days.
Out of the other three, apparently. Okay, so who would be last then?
You
who
can't
are we kicking
kick
out?
Anybody
Kansas?
Out.
That's the point. That is the whole point. So you're telling me that these are this.
If there's going to be any team that can be kicked out, if there's going to be any team, it's going to be Indiana. Because if you look up anywhere on what a blue blood
Indiana's
is,
one.
If you look up Ooh. Who is a blue blood, Indiana comes up every single time.
Absolutely.
You
not.
Might not think well, it. You might not think
those people
it, but
are
it does.
Stupid.
Because they
Indiana
have
hasn't won anything in 20 years.
Okay, so listen, is this about how many championships you've won? Is it about recent success? Indiana has five natties along with Duke.
When did they win those?
It
in
doesn't
the 1800s?
Matter. They have five. Yes, when is the last matter. Time that UCLA that won matter? One? When was the last time UCLA won a natty?
It's been Barely.
It's
recent,
been a long time. Correctly. They've been to the Final Four, well, then, but they haven't won an Natty. So let's kick them out then.
Let's kick them out. Okay with that. That's what I'm saying.
UCLA out. They have 11.
Okay, that's my point. If you're sitting here saying they have 11 national championships, that doesn't even touch what UConn has done historically. Blue Bloods have to be a historic thing. A roundabout thing. This isn't.
Listen,
just like,
you're making okay, this hey, argument, we've won. But then if whenever I try and use the same argument that you're using for Indiana, you're like, "Oh no, they haven't won anything recently." So then, if we're gonna talk about recent, if we're gonna talk about
a whole thing, it's got to be an entire thing. You can't tell me that just because. Okay, let's switch this to college football. Is Notre Dame the best program of all time? Absolutely not. Why? Because they haven't won crap since the 1800s. It's the same thing with Indiana.
Indiana has won 5 natties.
Okay. When was the last one?
The last one was in 02. No, that was runner-up. Okay. Runner-up. 87.
That's 20 years 87. Ago. That's okay, my point. You just doubled it. That's 40 years ago.
All right, hold on. So we're talking about point. Bob Knight didn't coach a blue blood.
No, if you're okay. If,
Bob Knight?
Hold on. When did he coach them?
He coached them from 71 to 2000.
Okay, so you can.
So you have that. 80s, so you have that. Hold on. Their, hold on. Can, hold on. So you have that. Let me bring up all the other stuff like I had for Kansas, okay? Let's see. Where is it? Why is it
okay,
not
but that's
the same?
My point. Like, when he's coaching them in the 80s, you can claim them as a blue blood, but you cannot claim them as a blue blood anymore because they haven't won a championship in 40 years. Yeah, no,
if you
wrong?
Can just randomly remove teams from blue blood status, you can
point.
Add
yes, you
teams
can.
To blue blood status.
No, you get your blue blood card revoked if you don't win a championship in 40 years. It's gone. You don't get it. This isn't a library card that you can just renew every year. It's gone. Your renewal status is when you win a championship. If they win a championship next year, then sure, we can circle back around to this and have the same conversation. But if you don't win a championship in 40 years, you don't get to claim yourself as a blue blood. You can be first off the bench. Okay. They could be sixth man. They're sixth man of the year right now. I'll give you that. But they're not top five.
Mason.
Yeah, no, they haven't won in 40 years.
This is absolutely unbelievable. This is absolutely unbelievable. Oh, it really
God,
is.
This is unbelievable. Break it down. North Carolina won a championship.
What was the last time they won it, Mason? You can't even tell me.
It's been at least in the past 5 years that they won a championship.
Hold on, before I look this okay. up, what is your definition of recent?
Recent is in the last like 15 years.
15, not 5?
No, 15.
15, that's what we're saying. So we're going back to
Blue Blood.
Back to okay. what? 2009?
Yeah, sure. We'll do 2009.
Let's do 2010 because it's easier. 2010. Okay, so past 13 years, okay? Past 13 years. They have one.
Okay, cool. What about Duke? Duke definitely has one. I know that. And so does Kentucky. Kentucky definitely has one. I know that.
Okay, Duke has two since 2010.
Okay, what about Kentucky? Pretty sure they have one. I'm sorry, I need to doubt myself a little bit.
Don't get nervous, Mason.
I'm getting nervous.
Kentucky has one.
Okay. Now UCLA. UCLA is the one that I'm scared about.
They haven't. I can tell you right now they
haven't. I don't think they have. But I bet you they have one in the last 40 years.
The last championship they've won was 95.
Okay, cool. We're good. That's 30 years.
95. Okay, 30 years. What is your do? So then, if we're saying most championships since 2010, UConn has 3. That's more than any of the teams that you brought up.
Okay, but UConn does not have the historical aspect that the other teams do to consider them a blue blood. in 20 years, we can sit back and have this conversation. If UConn wins another one or two in 20 years, then they can be inducted and they can knock out.
So I just want all you people to hear this, that Mason wants to kick UCLA out of being a blue blood and wants to kick Indiana at being a blue blood. Nobody can be a blue blood. If Duke didn't have that one in 2010, they wouldn't be a blue blood. Okay.
Mason doesn't believe it. So they don't get kicked out. It's not even kicking Indiana out. They're not even in the club. So you can't get kicked out if you're not in.
I'm still looking up Indiana stuff here. They're seventh Russell, shut up, dude. they have the sixth most tournament appearances, seventh in all-time wins, tied for fourth with Natties, tied for sixth for title game appearances, and tied for eighth in Final Four appearances. You don't think that's a blue blood?
Sounds like they're outside the top five for everything.
Except in the thing that matters in Natties.
Look, they're tied, so they're basically like eighth.
I guess it's a good thing we don't have any listeners in Indiana. Otherwise, you might get some hate mail coming in, dude.
Look, the only good thing that's ever come out of Indiana is Larry Bird. So we're good. Shout out to Indiana.
Wow. I'm going there. Not even Bob Knight. What's wrong with you?
Man, he's old.
Let's move on, Mason. Let's get to actually where you have a strong suit, and that's actually NBA. Okay, so let's move on to NBA. What's going on in the NBA, Mason? We have a week until the play-in starts. What's going on?
So we're kind of at the point in the season where teams are starting to shut down their guys, except for the Lakers, apparently, who have surged since the trade deadline, which makes me very sad. But honestly, like, we're pretty much starting to get locked into the playoffs. The play-in starts in about a week at this point. So that's exciting. I mean, it's still pretty chalk from what it has been. Like I said, like, the Lakers, they've been surging. So they're out of the play-in.
They're still at seventh.
If I remember correctly. They're still at seventh.
They're still half game back of Golden State.
They do have a chance to bump into the sixth, if I remember correctly. Yeah, like you said, half game back. But I'll be honest, man, the biggest disappointment that's happened so far is Dallas. Dude, I have no idea, man. I don't think this is a Kyrie thing. I don't know. Look, I am the biggest Kyrie hater out here right now. But I don't know. I feel like the team around him and Luka right now is just really stupid. Kyrie is not great on defense. Luka, even worse on defense. So you're surrounding them with guys like Tim Hardaway Jr. and Christian Wood. Neither one of them play defense. And so it's basically like, if you're Kyrie and Luka, you have to outscore everybody to win, but you're not going to be able to do that because you're not getting any stops on the defense end. So that's really unfortunate for them. I mean, they're still a game behind Oklahoma City right now for the 10 seed, so they might be able to squeak into the playoffs or the play-in. But even if they do squeak in, I don't see them making much noise, if we're being honest. But yeah, everybody else, man, is just kind of shutting things down. Houston, San Antonio, Portland, Utah, all shutting down. And I mean, yeah, the sixth seed in the East is going to be interesting. It's between Brooklyn and Miami right now. Miami is one game back of Brooklyn, but I do think that Brooklyn holds the tiebreaker in the series. So that's pretty much going to be chalk. I mean, yeah. Milwaukee and Boston are still looking like the two best teams in the league, even though Boston did just lose to Philly, so that's pretty stupid. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm getting excited. I love NBA playoffs. It's a blast.
What happened with 140 against the Bucks? Like, what? Like, did just everything put up just go in? Like, what happened?
Yeah, pretty much. The Celtics, they have this thing that they do where they sometimes decide that they're just going to make every shot, and that's what they did. So I loved it and I had a blast. But really, like, the Celtics, man, they're so inconsistent right now. It's kind of scaring me against Milwaukee. I feel like they're better than everybody else in the East. Like, I know everybody's been making a big deal about them having to play Philly in the second round. I don't see it, especially when Boston's healthy. Really, Milwaukee's the only team that scares me as a Boston fan. So we'll see what happens. I mean, like, I don't want to basically, like, to me, Milwaukee has been the best team so far this year after Middleton got back and healthy. So I do think that it will come down to Boston-Milwaukee for, honestly, for the championship. Like, if they make it to the East against each other, Eastern Conference Finals against each other, I think that'll pretty much help decide who's going to be your champion this year.
No chance for the Nugs?
I don't think so, man. I love Jokic as much as the next guy, but I feel like he's going to have to be a little bit better defensively if they want to actually take that step and win the championship. I don't know if he can do it or not. I mean, he's so awesome on the offensive end that it might kind of just contradict himself, but I don't think so. I think when it comes playoff time, he's going to have to step up a little bit. So we'll see if it happens or not. That's been his thing lately, is like past couple of years, he's had his running mates, Michael Porter Jr., Jamal Murray have both been hurt in the playoffs. So like, I don't think you really know what you get from Jokic in the playoffs because he's having to take so much of a load the past like 2-3 years. So I don't know.
What are we thinking about the Suns now? They're looking at the 4 seed right now.
Yeah. So the Suns are kind of, the Suns would be my pick to come out of the West right now. Just a combo of Devin Booker and Kevin Durant's just insane. So I think with Kevin Durant coming back, I want to say it was earlier this week or last week, it's given them about 4 or 5 games to kind of get their footing together. But if we're being honest, Kevin Durant is probably the easiest plug and play superstar that we have in the league right now. Like, you could put him on any team and he's going to make it work with everybody just because of how awesome of a scorer he is and how awesome of a playmaker he is. And so when you're giving him two guys like Devin Booker and Chris Paul, it's a game changer for him. And what's crazy about KD is Chris Paul is probably the best all-around point guard that he has actually played with. And that's including guys like Steph Curry and Russell Westbrook. Steph Curry is a better player than Chris Paul has ever been. But point guard-wise, facilitating the ball, getting guys open, and doing stuff like that, passing-wise, it's Chris Paul is night and day better than Steph Curry ever was.
Yeah, I mean, Steph is more of a shooting guard than he is really a point guard. Right. He's just a shooting guard playing point.
Exactly, yeah.
So is your prediction the Bucks and Suns in the finals, Mason? Is that what I heard?
No, absolutely not. You know how big of a homer I am. I will never not pick against the Celtics. So right now my pick is Celtics Suns. And I'm sticking with it.
Who's MVP?
Jason Tatum. No, I'm kidding. I don't know, man. So if you would have asked me 2 days ago, I probably would have said Jokic. But Embiid did just have 50 tonight. I mean, I feel like Embiid has been the most dominant player in the league so far this year. And he was my pick. I don't know if you remember. He was my pick. Start of the season. So I'm just going to stick with it.
Embiid. It's going Embiid. Got to make sure you're not racist, yeah. Right? Got to pick the black guy.
Thank you. Hear that, everybody. Not racist.
Hashtag. Did you hear that, Kendrick Perkins? Okay, make sure. Hey, just yeah. get this guy an MVP vote, okay?
Dude, I...
What a joke. Thank God
it's
for
a crazy thing. That's
thank God there. For JJ Redick. Yeah. And I thought I would never say this from the time that I hated him at Duke when LSU beat him and whatever round it was. It was wonderful. It is really funny. Me and my dad have a joke anytime that like we're shooting the basketball and one of us just like bricks it. We just call each other JJ Redick because that's what he did. Oh, that's what he did in the NCAA tournament game against LSU. He played horrible. So it's lived on. It's great.
Well, I'm happy for you, but I love JJ. So
I love him for that. I listened to his podcast with Damian, with Lillard the other, like, I guess it was probably a month ago or so now. And I thought it was great. It gave me a way more respect for Lillard. I already like Lillard. I just like him even more now.
Redick's, he easily has the best NBA podcast out there right now. So if anybody is trying to get more in-depth NBA knowledge, go to him for sure, because he does a lot of interviews and podcasts with actual players that are out there right now. And he gets the real the real answers from him. So it was pretty cool. I really like his podcast.
All right. So any other notes that you want to talk about on NBA before we move on?
Well, I mean, we just hit on how stupid the MVP is right now. They just came out with a new CBA agreement, which is pretty cool, but I also don't completely understand it right now, so I can't comment too much on that.
Make sure you get your reading glasses and lawyer hat on.
Yeah.
We'll get back to you in about a month.
Huh? It is a lot. It is a lot. But they did agree on that, so we're not going to have another lockout, so that's pretty cool. Playoffs coming up. No, that's it. That's all I got. All
right, well, let's go on to a little bit of NFL. I mean, basically, the NFL now is just waiting on the draft to happen at the end of April, along with probably everybody else's fantasy football, if you're in a dynasty league. Unless you're ours, because the rest of our league decided, oh, let's wait until August to do it.
Yeah.
Thanks, RIP guys. Really sucks. Appreciate it. Now we're going to have people having to contemplate trades for the next 5 months.
That's what I'm here for. Your trade guy.
Trade guy over here.
Okay. I was thinking about it earlier. I was trying to figure out how many trades I've actually made in our league so far. And I think it's definitely around 10.
It's at least
probably 10. Over 10. It's at least 10.
And it's probably like at least 500 trade offers.
Oh, God. Don't even get me started on that one. I don't even think I can count that.
So.
You know what's funny? Every day I sit there and I'm like, okay, I'm not going to send a trade to anybody today. And then something happens and I'm like, okay, you know what? Let me just send one out. And then, yeah, it just goes from there. But every day I try and not send one. It never works.
Listen, Mason, I think we should just like trade the same players back and forth for like the next month. Just like make the trade like once a okay. week. It's like, hey, let's trade. And then just do it just to see, just to screw with people and see what they say. So they're like, okay, they just like made like just like a low tier trade, you know, some random guys. Oh, they just traded those guys back to each other? What's going on here? They did it again? Listen, I think I have our next great idea. Our next troll session here.
That would be fantastic. That would be fantastic.
We'll talk after we get off here. So yeah, so we got the NFL draft coming up end of April. I think a lot of people are really interested to see where a lot of players go. It's seeming like CJ Stroud is going to be number one overall, and Bryce at two, and then who freaking knows after that is what it seems like. Tons of praise for Bijan. Obviously, he's the top running back in the draft. Lots of comparisons to Saquon. Hopefully he's not as injury prone as Saquon. Jackson Smith and Jigba, Quentin Johnston. I mean, there's a lot of what seems to be big stars. And then you have your quarterbacks that always find themselves at the top of the draft that should be nowhere near the top of the draft. And Richardson and Will Levis. So let's go ahead and just start there. Richardson and Levis. I mean, like, why do NFL teams always do this to themselves? They always screw themselves up by picking what they think is the next great thing at quarterback because of their measurables at a combine or at a pro day instead of what's actually on film. So, like, what's the deal here?
I think it's all because of Josh Allen. Like, I think I blame all of it on him. Like, to me, Josh Allen was...
I mean, he's pretty solid at Wyoming.
I mean, was he though?
I think like, he was.
I'm sure his numbers were okay. We'll pull up his numbers and we'll compare to what Will Levis did. Because, like, to me, you always heard about how good Josh Allen was going to be in the pros because of his strong arm and XYZ, and he could move, which has all come true in the NFL. But also, you would turn on the tape for Wyoming, and they were never winning. Like, it felt like that he wasn't putting it on the field or in the win column, which is basically the same thing that's been happening with Will Levis. Like, they didn't ever win anything at Kentucky. And so I kind of blame all of it on Josh Allen at this point, but you know, it kind of goes different ways.
Okay. So here's what I got. I think, let me actually get this side by side real quick to tell you. All right, so Will Levis, he started two seasons at Wyoming, and Will Levis, it looks like he started half the time at Penn State. So I'll just give you his Kentucky numbers because I think that's really all that anybody really cares about.
Yeah.
So for comparison here, for 2 years and 2 years, so at Wyoming, Josh Allen was at 56% completion percentage and threw for over 5,000 yards and 44 touchdowns, 21 interceptions. He had a bigger year his sophomore year than he had his junior year, but he also played in three more games, so he might have gotten hurt in 2017 or something at Wyoming. Will Levis passed for 200 more yards at Kentucky and only had one less touchdown, but two more interceptions. So he had 43 touchdowns to 23 interceptions. His QBR rate was 149.9 to 137.7 for Josh Allen. So stat-wise, it does look like Josh Allen has a little bit more there, as he did have a 65% completion percentage there. So a little bit better at Kentucky, better competition as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I that's kind of where I go with it. Like, once Josh Allen came out, and honestly, this probably could have happened before. I just, like, my memory, Josh Allen was the first one where it kind of started happening, where it's like, okay, you're a big body with a gigantic arm, so we're going to overdraft you and hope that your talent outplays what happened with your college tape. And it happened with Josh Allen, and it also happened with Justin Herbert. So I think what I see is that teams are hoping that it will happen with Anthony Richardson and also Will Levis. But I don't know. Like, I mean, if you take it back to last year, like, Malik Willis was supposed to be the first quarterback off the board, and after everything with his pro day, he dropped to, like, what, third round, I think it was, or second round? It was something crazy like that. And so I don't know.
So if you had to pick one, or the other, Will Levis or Anthony Richardson, who do you pick? You're GM. You have a quarterback to pick. Bryce Young and CJ Stroud are already off the board. Who's your pick? Do you even go one of those two, or do you go somebody else?
I was just about to say that. Can I go? I would go him too, because I would take him over both of them. I would take him
even with the torn ACL. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, even with torn ACL, for sure. Well, I mean, like, even with Hendon Hooker, like, his 1 year at Tennessee was every bit as good as what their 2 years were. And it's not going to add up numbers wise for sure, but, like, film wise, tape wise, and everything like that, like, just eye test, Hendon Hooker was like 10 times better than what Will Levis and Anthony Richardson were. So I would take Hendon.
Yeah, I think I would take Hendon too. I mean, here's the thing with Will Levis. It looked like, if I'm going to be fair at all, I would say that the best version of Will Levis was not this past year, but the year before at Kentucky, because he had more weapons and he actually had an offensive line. This past year, Kentucky was really rough for him, as you can probably see by his numbers, and he didn't have an offensive line. It wasn't a great year for them offensively. And part of that, you got to put on him. But the other part is just, he didn't really have a lot of pieces around him to help him. Anthony Richardson, like, this is, I think Anthony Richardson, I think, is probably where I have the most question marks of, okay, why are you being thought of in a first round? Because,
yeah,
if you've watched this tape, yeah, he has a lot of, like, he has some Superman moments like he had in Utah, but then go watch him play LSU, or go watch him play Kentucky, or go watch him play. Like, you have way too many examples of him not being able to throw a football. And, like, you can't even make the comparison to Lamar, because Lamar was a baller at Louisville. So, like, he's had 1 year as a starter, and then he's going to come out and you're going to draft him third or fourth overall. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, he's not Cam Newton, because Cam actually could play. He won the Heisman. You know what I mean? Like that's the kind of body style he is. Like, they're trying to compare, like, you want to compare him to, like, these high profile guys that did actually work. The big difference between him and Cam and Lamar, and even RG3, because RG3 had a good few years before his injuries caught up to him. Like, the difference between them is that they all had huge success in college before they got high draft picks in the NFL. And AR-15 ain't that, man. And somebody's going to take a risk, and I have a feeling Like, to me, the biggest, like, make sense place for him to go is Baltimore, but he's not going to drop all the way to Baltimore. So,
no. So, if you are picking between the two of them,
I'd take Levis.
That's funny because I would take Richardson. Like, I watching Levis at Kentucky, like, nothing jumped off the paper. Nothing. Like, I never saw anything from him that I actually sat there and said, okay, yeah, you should be a top 20 pick in the NFL draft. Never saw that once from him. At least with Anthony Richardson, like, there are some tangibles that you can see that he could potentially have success in the NFL. So, like, me, I would rather take the shot on Anthony Richardson's potential than what Will Levis is going to be offering. But, like, I would say that Levis is a lot safer than Richardson for sure. But I would just rather have that potential because I also don't see Levis hitting anything.
Listen, I know
like
that
either.
Will Levis can throw a football and he's a quarterback.
Okay, well,
like,
yeah.
We're talking quarterback here. I know Will Levis can fling the ball around. Dude, I don't know if Anthony Richardson can consistently throw the ball. Like, we're talking about, like, big time project here. Like, did you watch him against Florida State? Did you watch him against Kentucky? Yeah. Did you watch him against any actual decent team besides Utah? Like, he goes through these stretches where, like, maybe he can throw the ball, go watch him against Georgia and not be able to throw anything and throwing right to people five times in a row. Yeah. Or against Florida State, he can't throw the ball. Like he has potential there. Like, you can build him up. If I'm picking at I'm picking you three overall and giving you all this guaranteed money and spending all this money, I don't want a big risk like that. I'll go with the cipher guy, with a guy that I know can throw the ball 80 yards down the field to Will Levis, also has some wheels and has that game mentality where he'll actually go get it, kind of like the mentality that Joe Burrow has of, I'm going to get what I can, I play football, I'll hit somebody type thing in college. That's what Will Levis has. Now, it got him hurt, but he at least wanted to do it. Like, I'll take that over, you're a physical freak and specimen, but I don't know if you can consistently throw the football because you haven't shown it on film in consecutive games ever. So,
to be fair, I don't think either one of us are taking either one of them at three.
Okay,
so
at four,
I would definitely pass on both of them. No, I would pass on both of them at four too.
So, obviously, one of the bigger guys, especially when it comes to fantasy, is going to be Bijan Robinson. And I've seen a lot of different mock drafts and a lot of different things that could make you a little uneasy, depending if you're picking Bijan Robinson, in my opinion. He goes to Dallas, and I'm just like, he already had Tony Pollard. You're not going to, like, play, like, all the snaps, like... I don't know. And then also, you want to go to, what was the other one? Where did Mel Kiper put this guy? Let me look at this. Or not Mel Kiper, freaking McShay. Even more disrespect.
Look, I would be extremely happy if he went
go
to the Cowboys.
Go to Dallas? Or Cowboys not have Dallas, a go to Detroit to die.
Yeah, that one's gross. No, give me that one.
Go to the Commanders.
I rebuke that one. Get that one away. I'd be okay with that one, actually, because they did just get Eric Bieniemy in the offseason. So, like, maybe there's a chance that he can revive something out there. And also, I mean, he's fighting snaps with Brian Robinson. I mean, look, I love Brian Robinson, but is he a full-time RB1 workhorse? I don't know about all that.
So, I mean, what is the best situation for Bijan, do you think? Philly?
Philadelphia. It's not even close. Oh, not even close. If he goes to Philadelphia, I will cry tears of joy for my fantasy team. I would be so happy.
You better hope he drops down to 30, dude.
I would. Or they just take him at 10. Let's do that. Philly, come on. Just take him at 10. We're good. Everybody would be happy.
Everybody would be happy? Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Everybody.
All right. Okay, besides Philly, who else would be good?
Man. I don't know. I feel like I'm just so locked in on Philly. But, like, I wouldn't hate it if he went to Dallas, if we're being honest. Like, I know you don't like that. But Dallas has shown a long history of having very successful running backs. And if we're being honest, if they had full faith in Tony Pollard, he would have just taken over last year. But they still sprinkled in Ezekiel Elliott there with him also. And if we're being honest, Pollard's on a franchise tag this year. So who's to say that after this year, if he does go to Dallas, then Pollard's out the door. It doesn't. So to me, like, I think Dallas would be fun. So I'm cool with both.
What do you
think
about, so Ole McShay has Hendon Hooker going at 23 to Minnesota.
Oh, wow. I actually really like that for him. I feel like if he goes somewhere, it needs to be somewhere with an established quarterback who's kind of out the door.
Kirk Cousins.
Which is exactly what Kirk Cousins. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Because he'll be able to sit for a year. To me, that's so perfect for somebody like Hendon Hooker to be able to sit for a year, rehab the knee, get it right, but also learn how to be an NFL quarterback in the right system. And if you're sitting there, you're throwing the ball.
It doesn't hurt to pass the ball to the best wide out in the league, does it?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, I really like that for him.
Let's see. Let's take a look at a couple other ones that he had on here. He has Jahmyr Gibbs going in the second round to the Cardinals. What do you think about your boy Jahmyr to the Cardinals?
Man, I don't know. The best thing about Jahmyr Gibbs is that he's a really good receiving running back. So he can catch the ball in space. He can do work from any angle that he's catching the ball. To me, when you have a running quarterback like Kyler, he's not going to dump the ball off very much. But who's to say that doesn't change now that he did blow his knee out? So maybe he can look to dump the ball a little bit more, dump the ball off a little bit more often instead of scrambling out the pocket. That was interesting. But also, James Conner is still there, so like he's not going to be hitting the ground right off the bat as the RB1. Yeah, I don't think I like it. Now that I've talked to myself about it.
Jordan Addison to the Bills at 27?
I like that for him. I don't feel like he's a certified wide receiver one in the NFL, so if he goes somewhere where he can kind of hide behind Stephon Diggs and be the wide receiver two for them, I think that would be good for
Dalton
him.
Kincaid from Utah being the first tight end off the board to Jacksonville.
Get that out of here. Michael Mayer.
He's got Michael Mayer going to Dallas at 26.
I like that too.
Replacing Schultz.
Replacing Schultz. You still have Dak. And I mean, CeeDee Lamb is still there, so you're not expected to carry a huge load in the receiving game. So yeah, I like that. And if we're being honest, I like Kincaid to the Jaguars also, because he could take the year and learn from Evan Engram. Evan Engram will be out the door next year. And you're good. You kind of take over from there. Oh, so that's not terrible. But I would rather have Mayer going off the board first as my tight end one.
And I'll just give you a couple more. Quentin Johnston to Baltimore. Does Baltimore actually get a weapon?
I feel like obviously they have to figure out this whole Lamar situation first. If they re-sign Lamar, then I think they definitely need to go for a wide receiver. I don't know if I would actually go for Johnston if I'm them. I feel like they need somebody more like Jaxon Smith-Njigba or Jordan Addison, to be honest with you. Like, I feel like Johnston's just like a super big play down the field wide receiver, whereas the other two are kind of middle of the field possession wide receivers, gonna be able to catch the ball, get you 12 yards and stuff like that. Where I don't really feel that with Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, in the draft here, that McShay has JSN going at 11 to Tennessee Titans, and then the next wideout that he has off the board is Zay Flowers from Boston College. Honestly, never heard of him until I started reading these draft projections. So something must have happened at the combine for this guy to rise up. I obviously haven't been paying attention. So maybe I'm just stupid, Mason. Am I stupid, or like, did this guy just come out of nowhere?
Well, no. No, he's always been at the top of the draft boards. It's just that he played at Boston College.
Makes sense.
And you're hidden at Boston College. But also he's like 5'9" or something crazy like that. And so I don't feel like his body's going to hold up in the NFL, but he is super quick, very quick, twitchy type of guy. Somebody like Wes Welker, maybe Julian Edelman type of guy, but maybe a little bit faster.
Like a Tyreek. Not as thick.
Not that fast. Yeah, not as thick either. But I mean, like, you're at Boston College, so you kind of...
He's got him at 20 going to Seattle. So then whenever you get to Baltimore at 22, you would have your choice between Quentin Johnston, Jordan Addison, who else? Jalen Hyatt, those kind of guys. So out of those, who would you want?
If I was Baltimore...
If you're Baltimore and you have your pick between Hyatt, Addison, and Johnston, who do you pick?
I would take Addison. If I'm Baltimore, I would take Addison. But personally, if I had a team, I would probably I think Johnston is the better wide receiver out of all of them. I just feel like Addison fits what Baltimore needs better than what.
So you think
Johnston
it's probably
does.
A better a fit for sense. Them to swap? Then do you think it's a better fit for Baltimore to have Addison and for Buffalo to have Johnston?
100%. Yes. 1,000,000%.
Yeah, because I mean, if you're Buffalo and you get Addison, you're basically redrafting Diggs, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you just have, like, another Stephon Diggs, pretty much. But, like, because, okay, Gabe Davis for the Bills is exactly what Quentin Johnston is, just not as good. So, if you're taking that deep threat, big-bodied wide receiver, I would much rather have that with Josh Allen on the Bills than I would with Lamar Jackson on.
What do you want for the 7th pick overall, Mason?
Ooh.
Absolutely not. For 7, you're insane. I'm not asking for number 1, Chase? Here, Mason. I'm asking for 7.
Look, you know who I want for me.
I tried, guys. I guess it's not going to happen on the podcast here. So let's get to the final segment here, Mason, and biggest disappointments as a fan. Right now I have one that really comes to mind, but I'll let you go ahead.
All right, we'll rapid fire. So the reason that this came up for me is obviously because of Alabama blowing it in Sweet 16 this year to San Diego State. So like that immediately jumped to my number one.
Number one? I think
it's close for me. Yeah. Well, I have to do this off the last like 20 years. Not 20, like 18
years. You're
doing
that over because, any like, of the Bama football losses and like the Iron Bowl, like the kick six. And
yes.
All of that?
Correct.
Just a Sweet 16 loss?
Cam, I have never seen Alabama basketball play past the Sweet 16 in my life, and this is the year that they were supposed to do that. So it hurts. Okay, this one physically hurts me.
Okay, I've thought a couple more as you were talking, so I'll go with one. This one really hurt last year, Mason, very, very much. Cut me to my core, to where I didn't care about college basketball at all this year, and that was my boy. Will Wade getting fired last year has cut me to my core and made me just not care about LSU basketball at all this year. And they deserved everything they got for being as horrible as they are with freaking Matt McMahon. It's hurt, Mason. And now I'm a Cowboys fan. Go McKinney State.
I love it.
Let's go.
Look, and he's already suspended
only
from
for
there
five
too,
games.
So
it's fine.
It's right in. All right, so I think my second one, kick six is up there. That one really hurt me. I think I was more shocked about that it actually happened than like disappointed. I think disappointment wise, I have to go to like 2014, first year of college football playoffs, when Ohio State just smacked
when Zeke ran all over the field.
Yeah, that one really hurt. That one was very disappointing. That would have to be up there.
Dude, just kind of thinking back to that team. Freaking Zeke Elliott and Michael Thomas on the same team, dude. Like crazy.
Ooh, buddy.
Yeah. All right, next one for me, and I'm going to your favorite sport of baseball. This is back in 2017, LSU in the championship series against freaking Florida. Freaking Florida. And our ace didn't even get to pitch in the series because we lost and got swept in 2 games. In the last game, literally freaking Jacoby Jones, I think it was, freaking got called out on his way to second base for runner interference. and then we lost in the next inning. We would have scored there because the guy from third scored, but they called him out because of the freaking runner interference, and then we lost. And it hurt. It I was so mad, and that one hurt. So let's go to another one.
Baseball. I don't know what this is. Okay, my next one's a deep one, actually. 2009, Kevin Garnett hurts his knee and ruins the Celtics' chance at winning the finals. That one hurt. That one was pretty brutal. Because, okay, so 2008, you have Garnett and Ray Allen both come to the Celtics. They win the championship that year with Paul Pierce, creating the Big Three. So they win the championship in 08, turn around. 2009 were even better than the 08 team, but KG hurts his knee, ruins it. They don't win 09, and then they only win one championship together. Wow, this was very
Why did you decide to do this? Listen, I'll probably end up cheering you up on my next three that I have, so you'll probably really like this one. Okay. So my next one, and again, this is like number three for me, so I have number two and then number one after this. So number three would be the LSU choke job against Bama in 2014 with Anthony Jennings and us choking in overtime because the kicker kicked the ball out of bounds after we took the lead to allow you guys to kick a field goal and then win in overtime. That one hurt, and you probably see where I'm going with the next couple ones, so you're welcome.
Okay. My next one would have to be Trevor Lawrence's freshman year,
when he dragged
his butthole over Alabama in the national championship. Yeah, that one was terrible. That one was so bad. He just absolutely dog walked us the entire game. Oh, that was terrible. We were supposed to kill him that year too, and he just comes out and murders us. Oh, that was bad.
Oh, okay. My next one, Mason, and I'm probably going to throw you for a loop here in my ordering, but number two on my list is going to be the national championship for 2011, where you drug us up and down the field and we couldn't hardly cross the 50-yard line. That was the most demoralizing game that I have ever watched in my entire life. After we had the most historic season in the seasons of seasons, and then it ends that way, was
in the game of a lifetime.
It was heartbreaking. We lost game of the century. We won game of the century 9-6 in overtime.
Yeah.
We beat West Virginia, who ended up drubbing Clemson that year in the Orange Bowl. We killed Georgia. Yep. We killed Arkansas, who was number three. We beat Oregon. So we beat the Pac-12 champ. I think they were like Big East. West Virginia was at that point. They were champ. So like both of those won their like big bowl games. And then we beat Georgia. And then we come out and have to play Alabama again because Oklahoma State choked against Iowa State. And then Les Miles decided to run all the players into the ground and in bowl prep. And then we get drug all over the field. So that was really demoralizing. It was about as demoralizing as watching Tennessee destroy us this last year in Tiger Stadium when I got to go to the game. It was about as demoralizing as that. But this one was for a natty.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, that's really interesting. So I'm actually very surprised that you didn't pick the Texas A&M loss. So you're saying that the Tennessee loss
it's was worse than because the Texas I was A&M
loss this year?
It's worse because I was there. I was at the game. And my family and my best friend have been playing to go to this game, hoping that it'd be a really good game, especially. And then it was freaking moved to 11 o'clock because CBS is stupid. And we just didn't have a chance the whole game. Like watching Hendon Hooker throw bombs on us all game and basically being in the Tennessee section hearing Rocky Top the whole time. And then walking out before the game is over. That's how demoralizing it was, Mason. So I had the benefit of driving home while I was listening to the A&M game. That one was really annoying too. But the A&M game, if you're asking me which A&M game hurt more, I would say the 20 million overtime game with Joe Burrow that we lost. Because apparently where you get to stop the clock whenever Kellen Mond knees the ball and instead of letting them lose. And it's... That one was more demoralizing than this past year. So, because we didn't have a chance against Georgia, so it didn't matter.
All right. Well, I'm really glad you said that. I'm really sad and butthurt that you said that, because you unlocked a memory for my last pick, for my fifth most demoralizing and defeated that I've ever felt as a fan. And it was 2007 at Bryant-Denny Stadium when Alabama lost to Louisiana Monroe. That was the worst. One of the worst I've ever felt as a fan, especially being there. I mean, like, I felt like I wasted like 2 weeks of my life being there, because the week leading up, I'm excited because I'm going to watch Alabama play. They lose. The entire week after, I'm insanely depressed because I had to sit there and watch them lose to Louisiana Monroe. So
that's pretty bad. Since you guys can't see this, Mason is literally crying right now in a corner.
You're not supposed to tell anybody that.
That's okay, Mason. This one will cheer you up. The most demoralizing thing that has ever happened that I've ever seen as a fan was the Yeldon screen pass game against LSU. This was the most demoralizing thing. This was the game, Mason, leading up, where we could everything that happened in the Natty game, like 9 months before, would have all been forgiven, would have all been forgotten. We would have gone undefeated the rest of the way and killed Notre Dame in the Natty game if we just make the tackle and win the game. But no, Jalen Mills decides not to come off his blitz and cover his responsibility and freaking choke it at the end in Les Miles fashion towards the end of his career against Alabama at home. And I was so sad after that game, Mason, because then I think we went on the next week to then lose to Ole Miss. So just like depression just covered the whole program. And we were never the same after that. It wasn't the Natty game that broke Les Miles and broke the LSU football program. It was the TJ Yeldon game that broke this program.
God, dude, no.
I hate you. Why did you make me learn?
Oh, man. I remember being so stressed out during that game because LSU was basically winning the entire game until like the last second of the game.
But it's okay. Joe Burrow made up for
it. Pretty good for me.
With the greatest team of all time. So, and we're going to end it right there, guys.
Second greatest. That's all for sure. Yeah.
Any other last comments before we head out of here?
I think we've covered it all this week.
Well, guys, until next time, it'll probably be another month or so because it's the off season. Like, what do you want from me? But we appreciate you guys so much for listening, and we'll catch you guys on the next one.